Hedged 100 metres to go. Still led three quarters. Hanshi wearing it down. Hedged is holding on and hedged one. Traffic Warden at the 150, still a good margin. It's three lengths through to Royale, and then Bizasto. Traffic Warden going strongly with 50 metres to go. Nurse to the line from the outside, draw at 1400, a big winner. And Cylinder right down the outskirts. And further back in the field, Ruthless Dame under pressure. Imperatrice at the clock tower, Magic Time. Cylinder the outside. Imperatrice really has to find Cylinder going with her. Cylinder over the top. Cylinder. Cylinder's from the Newmarket.
Now on PG Podcast Network, it's time for the year-round carnival with Vince Accardi and your host, Racetrack Rolfie.
G'day, thanks so much for checking out year-round carnival, our Monday review edition, and it was car in Melbourne. Some elite racing, some elite rides from Jamie Carr, Damien Lane, Blake Shin. Oh, geez, they're on fire, those guys in Melbourne. And, of course, some super racing in Sydney as well that we will dissect with Vince Accardi from Daily Sexuals. Good morning, mate.
Good morning, Ralphie. What a beautiful morning, mate.
Nice and warm. Woohoo.
Yep, that's for sure. Can you believe summer in March? Well, I'm glad it's arrived.
Absolutely. By the way, that audio, of course, courtesy of racing.com with Matt Hill's fantastic calls. Let's start with Flaminen, but also for those who didn't get our preview podcast, let's start also with the communication that you've had with the curator Liam O'Keefe from last week when you said, you didn't say, but there was the communication that was aeration. You said it badly affected how the track played, and you gave that across to our preview customers. But now for everyone, what type of communication did you find, and how did you then see the track play on Saturday, which obviously was early and they had to dump the water on with the severe weather conditions?
Okay, well, a couple of things. You know, we're closely observing the win report that they have on the website at Flemington. I don't know whether people go and look at that at all on the VRC site, but they basically give out all the current supposedly it's supposed to be every minute in terms of the wind changes, what direction's flowing, so you get some insight on what's happening. Probably my only concern that I have with it is if you do a continuous refresh, we notice that the fluctuation's like almost 10 kilometres. Right, so this is a little bit of a problem for us to try and say, okay, which one's the right one?
Yep.
To use, but what was very evident was the impact around the side. You know, this is traveling, like we're talking from the 1600 around that bend to the 14, all the way to the 6. That pretty, you had a pretty strong headwind that could be anywhere between sort of 16 kilometers to 24 kilometers per hour. Bit of a tailwind as you're coming just into that sort of section as you get inside the 600 meter mark, and then you had a crosswind across, particularly in the home straight. It was a pretty solid crosswind, and again, just looking at the variations of what that speed was in the straight, this is wind speed, up around that 13, 15 kilometers seemed to be the way it was most of the day. And then, of course, you get this up to the minute temperature as well. So, like, we started the day, oddly enough, it was 30 degrees, Ralphie, when race one jumped. And by the time we got to the end of the day, it was like 35. So you could see the move. So they definitely made the right call there. Now, as far as the track played itself, I thought this was really interesting. From a position from where you are at the 800 metres for the turning races, what was really evident here, we could see horses coming from midfield and back and winning and being, you know, like we typically like that you could be coming from up to six lengths off that lead speed. Definitely seen that happening. In terms of the lanes, though, it appeared to be very, very difficult for horses to get there. And what I mean to get there depends on what was happening in the in that lead up of the race, pressure wise, was going to determine it. But okay, let's have a look at race one, for instance. Up the straight, no surprise, lane 15. The same goes with race five, lane 18. But everything else didn't get there, Ralph, in those lanes.
I suppose Smallfields might have had a bit to do with it as well. But just to wrap up, your communication with Liam was last week. They just didn't get a chance to do what they want to do. And basically, it was a good example that the curators are asked to do the impossible, because for a top dressing or whatever, or the aeration that they had to do, ideally, he was telling you that they need 3 weeks rather than the two that they had to do.
Yeah, to be perfect. Yes, correct. Yeah. And I guess, you know, what impact does it have on performances? Well, the win was definitely a play at Flemington.
Yep. All right. Well, obviously, the feature race was the Newmarket Handicap. There was just the eight races. It was the standout race. And on our Friday preview podcast, this is what we had to say. There's 3 minutes, but have a listen to the type of depth that we were able to get across to our customers.
Well, let's look at it. 4.6 above, Ralphie. And a race matrix saying trending more like plus five. So yep. You know that was fantastic. Again, what I loved about that run was loved where it was in running first section, 1.2 lengths below benchmark, very heavy in the mid-race. The mid-race squeeze, you know, that performance between the 8 and the 400 was only 6.9, but it was 5.8 lengths above the benchmark for that split time. And then the taper at the end, like it still managed to run 4.6 above last 400 metres. And you could see the horse peaked just as it got to the 200 metre mark and then grinded through to the finish at a high performance. So you can't sit here and say to yourself, well, this is me talking, right? Yeah. That this horse can't run to that level or better. It's impossible, because that first up run, like we talked about Imperatrix, this also was not good for this horse. 2.5 below first section, 5.4 below between the 8 and the 4, 3 lengths slowdown. Nice finish though, plus 4. That's given you that warning. The horse is going well. The stable, like I said, I don't know if they're just the way they're tackling things, or is that they come out this campaign with, you know, very, very specific goals and not really, when I say not interested, of course they want to win whatever they can, right?
Yeah.
But not going to be too hung up if certain performances don't go their way, as long as they're going to be where they need to be in the grand final.
So a couple of things, and I think this is why the market's underestimated at this stage, and certainly on figures it's underestimating it. The Flemington miss on in the Coolmore in the spring, well, it was fifth up off the Everest, and we're already starting to see, I know the Everest is a relatively new race, but gee, it's grand final day for a lot of horses, and he'd been big in the Golden Rose. We spoke about Militarized before and Luckless, so two massive performances for a colt, third and fourth up. It was just end of prep, and then, as you said, first up was Sound. He's had a Barry trial last week. Tongue Tie goes on. Jamie Carr goes on. Other little things about trainer's intent, Vince. Jamie Carr Barry trial this in Sydney on the 30th of January.
Yeah.
I wonder why that was. Do you reckon that means because it's grand final day tomorrow and just get a feel for the horse? I do.
Yeah, without a shadow of doubt, right?
Yeah.
And you're spot on about what your communication was in terms of that Flemington run for the last run of the campaign. It fell off a cliff, Ralphie.
Yeah.
Also, what I probably didn't articulate enough was this horse is another runner that has an outstanding straight line speed. It's, you know, super dynamic. It's been able to go as well as plus 7.3. Then I look at the micro splits, how powerful is the last 200 metres. It's probably only a length inferior to a horse like Bonus Notches, who is a phenomenal 200 metre last, you know, top end speed right at the end of a race. This spells as the other serious threat. And I just believe every other runner is absolutely just making up the numbers.
And Vince, you said there was only three chances. Buenos Noches, who actually put up lame, Imperatrice and Cylinder. Cylinder came to play. He brought his Everest figure and Jamie Carr did the rest.
Yes, he did. And I felt like the lanes, like they definitely make a difference, Ralphie. Not the weight. So I just wanted to make sure that that's articulated, because a lot of people might saying, oh, well, the big weight difference was the major. No, it was where you're running in lanes ultimately had the biggest impact in terms of the overall performance, because realistically, there wasn't a lot between the two horses. Cylinder, fantastic, plus four overall, best performance of the day. Imperatrice ended up with a 2.7. Not as good as probably what it could have gone. How much do we want to attribute to the lanes? Well, the way I've scored it is pretty much about one length, Ralphie, is the maximum. So on the MPS margin point of view, it sort of still indicates that all things being equal, Cylinder still wins.
Yeah, and as we said, and we don't make it up on a Monday, we played you what we said about it, and you can listen to our whole, of course, whole podcast now, because we always post completely unedited. We didn't have much fun posting the Blue Diamond a couple of weeks ago, but we've been pretty on point since, and certainly we're on Saturday. What the point we wanted to make was that Cylinder already had a super IVR performance in that Everest, a super performance in the Golden Rose. It was trainer's intent. It was set for this race to peak and absolutely delivered on the day, whereas Imperatrice, not quite. Now, you've touched on it, but also one of our members, Tim, said, hi, Ralphie. Firstly, thank you for the product. Yesterday, it was on point. I had a great return on Cylinder. My question is, did weight play a role in the victory? I know Vince isn't big into factoring in weights, but did it on this occasion? So we've got a nice comparison, Vince. She carried a kilo and a half more. That ain't a lot.
No. And this is the reality. And I feel if you switch the lanes, who knows what could have happened, right?
Because yeah.
There is a variation there. But the reality is that's not what happened. The race was the race. And it was a fantastic contest between the two horses. And it was no surprise. Like, I certainly wasn't surprised myself. Like, at the end of the day, Cylinder was always going to be a very serious chance. The ride was fantastic. You have to, you know, really give it to Jamie Carr. She timed everything to perfection, Ralphie, let down at the right time, and was able to get the victory.
The other point with Imperatrice, and I don't think we're being a Monday expert here. I think we put that across. But up the straight at the moment, she hasn't been as big as she was at Moonee Valley. Now, what I'm saying, the context, I just want to put Moonee Valley, she was phenomenal twice. But she was able to chase a really hot speed and relax in the run and then just smash him. Whereas up the straight, it's a different race shape, isn't it? So they're not going flat out. And both times, rightly so, by the way, Ovi Boston put her in the race. But she wasn't dominant up the straight. So I just think it's a different dynamic for her.
Well, it could be sort of also articulated if you're on the inside and everybody's drifting to the middle. Those challenges all play a role. I don't feel Opie could have done any more than what he did. He actually rode probably the way I was visualising it, the way he was just going to continually bring himself across to try and optimise his position over the last 200 metres. And the reality was I felt that he did all that, and there was not much between them, Ralphie, at the end of the day.
No, and by the way, just to back up, I'm actually referring to her previous two wins up the straight. The wins weren't quite as strong IVR-wise as the Moonee Valley ones. I heard, I think it was Amy Johnson, I hope I got that right, from, I saw a clip posted from racing.com about EIPH, and she said, well, it's quite a fair point she's making, that you'd like to see the degree of EIPH posted, because she was said to have pulled up with EIPH, but what does that mean if it's severe? She said most horses do pull up with some kind of degree. So really, on her figures, she's probably been, what, a length and a half below her Flemington figure. So whether that's had an impact or not, only time will tell.
Yeah, she's definitely came behind her figures. My view is, of course, if it was in Cylinder's lane, probably ends up scoring about one length more. That brings it a bit closer. Yeah, there's still a gap, but ultimately, sometimes games are races of millimetres, inches. It's hard to say.
Kieran May was delighted with Bella Nipotina, who ran fifth, saying that just as she's getting older, she takes a lot more racing. So she'll go to Moonee Valley in a couple of weeks. That'll be an interesting race against Imperatrice because we just, you know, Moonee, as I said, Moonee Valley best Imperatrice, but will she be guaranteed to deliver it? But you'd have to think that Bella Nipotina's on the right plane upwards.
Oh, that's a stunning comment from the trainer.
What's that?
That's a stunning comment that he has made that communication, that he feels that the horse needs a lot of racing.
Yeah.
It's out of stack of racing.
No, no, as in fitness wise. It's just a horse that as she gets older, she's not a first up horse anymore. She needs to keep.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So like last prep when she won that Rose Hill run, what was that? That was fourth up. She was beaten second last year in the William Reid third up, beaten a length by Imperatrice. So I think he's saying that she's trending the right way for what he wants from her.
Okay. Well, yep. Look forward to seeing what happens.
Just back the truck up on cylinder one point, actually, while I'm thinking of it. So Golden Rose, he was huge. And then, as we said, produced that huge figure in the Everest, which is obviously now Australia's premier sprint. So he's done this. So it's saying that he can go bang and bang again. What type of projection could he go to with TJ Smith? Typically, you need a 5-6 range.
Here's the thing. It depends on how you're viewing the stable. Mm-hmm. I noticed some subtle strategy changes. We'll touch on it, you know, when we even get to Sydney. Maybe this stable has just like a really got a one track mind in terms of like Hong Kong trainers typically do, and that's just target one specific race and get that booming performance. Because this is the trend I'm seeing with a number of their horses. And now I'm looking at this particular runner. It could be a similar scenario, Ralphie. The only reality is this. What impact with the wind could you allow for an additional upside? And what happens when you don't get the lane bias? What does that mean for the horse? Does it mean that you come off a length and you improve a length and therefore you stay the same? And if this was its absolutely peaking run, is there any more to come? So just those little things that I just think through, the reality is it's a lightly raced, Ralphie. We can't put a ceiling on it. We definitely can't put a ceiling on it. And all the trend line figures does indicate that it's potentially a +5 horse. It's got to reach that milestone. And then maybe we can see if it goes beyond that. But it must be so close to its peak now or already peaked.
It's an interesting aside that, you know, the prize money is $1.5 million. I got in touch with a mate. I was a bit bullish about the horse. So yep. I got in touch with a mate during the week who's smart on this area. And I said, what would this be worth as a stallion side of things? And he said, probably double. So the horse is running effectively for $20 million, even though the prize money is $1.5 million.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
It's a different way of looking at it. Anyway,
so the right way to look at it.
Yeah. So that stable obviously won the previous race with Size Produce with Traffic Warden. Remember Vince when Animo started? There was not much on the clock, but he was a proper racehorse. And I'm just wondering how much can a horse evolve when he's run nothing on the clock, but the challenge of these horses without the skeletal strength to be able to do something here. It seems like this is pretty fast. Early speed, given the comparison with race 7, and then just completely legless late, a lot of them.
Well, yes, of course, and you've got to factor in the serious impact of the wind as well, Ralph.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Yeah,
you can see that it's pretty savage. Even though I've worked it pretty hard for an adjustment, the reality is the performance was, you know, good. It's still trending below benchmark overall, and it might be best to see when we get past benchmark.
Yeah, exactly. So, see what comes in the future. The we thought it was going to be a pretty competitive six race there for the mares, the CUNY Stakes, and it was. Autumn Angel and Molly Nick has turned up. Grinzingabelle didn't. Sort of over raced a bit there in the three wide position, as you said. Damien Lane generally likes to try and you know, take a sit. It didn't work on the day for Grinzinger Bell. Might have been a different issue. And Basilina seemed to emerge. She showed a bit of promise as a stayer in the Oaks. I kept on asking myself why Black Chin was keen to ride that horse, and that's why. $21 split the Moody Fillies in a three-way finish. Not much on the clock overall, but again, how are you assessing that through the win?
Well, firstly, Autumn Angel, like very, very late in our communication, it could have been Saturday morning, I just started to lean to this runner myself on a personal level. Whilst I didn't participate, there was just a few indicators that were sort of sending that trigger off that this could be a big push upwards, and just the overall general quality of the field. And then knowing that Damian Lane could do some very interesting things with this horse, right? Because he's got to deal with the issue of leading potentially, right?
Yep.
And overall, you probably have to deal with another reality, and that's how you're going to temper the win. And I feel that in many ways he's done the right thing in terms of trying to find that cover and get that opportunity to give his horse the best chance, because this is really what it was all about. I mean, you could see the lead speed was 0.4 below benchmark with Sassy Boom, and it ended up running third last, Ralphie. And this is just, you know, pretty much, you know, completely took its toll. In terms of how these horses went, it was a good contest, Ralphie, and they all look like improvers from a data perspective. But at the moment, I still feel they're not trending quick enough to where I'd like to see them. But they're young horses who are still evolving. So I do expect all three horses across the line to at least be, you know, a benchmark plus three range at some stage in the future.
Yeah, well, the point we're making from Caulfield, and we got to really explain that on the Friday, was that it's one thing to be unlucky, but you want to be able to see in the numbers how unlucky it was, and she just completely had that savage slowdown from the 400 to 200 at Caulfield, where
yes,
on Saturday she was able to run through it. How'd you find Von Hawk in your most advantage, by the way?
Well, Ralph, there was a couple of runners. Yeah, we didn't talk about this horse, no. Von Hawk. Just when I profile, I just looked at this profile. I said, given we could have all sorts of chaos with the speed of the race, this was a runner that looked like could take serious advantage of that, and hence the reason why I pushed it into – I might have pushed it into second, right?
Yeah, but you did, yeah.
Yeah, the reality was I thought, okay, if there's any threat to my money, it's this one.
Did you get your $1.30 amenable?
I did.
Well, there you go.
I did, so I'm not complaining, right? Yeah. But – what can I say? I'm looking, I'm saying, interesting. My thoughts were right about the other runner, but I would never have backed the other runner, Ralphie, you know, just from a business point of view. My mental mindset and the way I like to participate when it comes to money is very, very straightforward. It's actually boring because I respect the money too much. But in terms of the game that I play mentally about what are all the chances, well, that's a lot more exciting. It just means that, unfortunately, maybe you can call me non-courageous, I won't step out of the boundary. I'll just stick to my knitting. And, you know, most people wouldn't like it because it's super boring, but it fills up the account over a long period of time.
Well, D-Lane was a fun watch in race eight, Turtle Flame. And, I mean, the guy's just on fire. As I said, one of probably three or four in Melbourne at the moment. And you often articulate, true handicapping is actually positioned in running and then giving up a start. And this horse was luckless at last time here at Flemington, but then goes to Caulfield and concedes six lengths instead of a length to the leader, Revolutionary Miss. Couldn't have done much more out under the position running, but on Saturday, bang, right in the right spot.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, needless to say, Ralph, you summed it up perfectly. He's a star rider overall. There's only very few scenarios when you could be potentially negative on D-Lane, right? But the reality is, under most circumstances, he's going to get the job done if the horse is ready, willing and capable. And this was just exactly, you know, like a perfect execution. 10.8 lengths below benchmark first section, only tagging the lead speed, 3.2 lengths, perfect positioning. The mid-race was very explosive, I felt, Ralphie, for the whole field, and that pretty much put pay to a lot of horses' chances. And then I looked at the overall last 200 metres, with a plus 1.1. I don't feel the horse could have done much more. The squeeze was beautiful, like that mid-race move, 11.6. It was, if you ever want an ideal number in terms of not overextending and having too much lactic buildup, the golden sweet spot's about 12 lengths, Ralphie, at this distance range. And he came in with 11.6. I go, oh, that's perfect.
So Foxy Cleopatra, we had a bit of a discussion about her, and I get why Blakeshin went right back, because they're trying to get her to settle in the blinkers. She was explosive from just a non-winning position. She's back on track now, but what does this mean? Because at the moment, the mile's still her best range. I'm just wondering if they're going to have a throw at the stumps of the Australian Cup or stick to the mile, because at Moonee Valley in 2 weeks' time, there's a good mare's race.
Well, personally, right now, I hope they do stick to the mile.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that the 2000s or beyond's not something they should consider. I mean, it's performed reasonably well in the past, but it's the caveat's this race shape.
Yeah.
This horse, over the long distance, Ralphie, when you get to 2000 or more, has to have very, very soft pace. If it doesn't get that, well, I haven't seen any change yet. It's going to be trouble for the horse. And here you could see very slow pace, booming finish. That's its golden sort of setup. But mind you, when you're at a mile, you can be more versatile.
Yes. You got options because the pace, yeah, you're in touch. Okay, let's switch to Sydney, and we're switching to Sydney too with our preview podcast. So if you want to get our preview podcast, there'll be a four-week bonus option, so a bit of a discount there if you want to get the 4 weeks. But for the next 6 weeks, we'll be covering New South Wales, starting with the Coolmore this Saturday. But what we'll do when there's a feature elsewhere, we will still cover it. So, for instance, this week we will have a look at the All-Star Mile at Caulfield, the following week the William Reid, the week after the Australian Cup. Just that one Victorian race in isolation. For the next 6 weeks, we're covering the Sydney Carnival. If you want to get to our preview podcast, like I said, you can listen back to any of our old podcasts, completely unedited. We always post it on the Monday, and you can hear what we had to say about Newmarket Day, racetrackralphie.com.au, and there's an audio-only top-up for daily sectionals, customers who have already got the race speed profiles. Vince, let's start with Alistair's question here. I love Les Bridge, love Classic Legend, who should never have left these shores. Convinced, tell us about the new legend, the Celestial Legend. So the round with Guineas, it was a super race to watch. It covered ground, but it just kept coming. And there was a three-way finish between Militarized, Cafe Millennium, and I'm sure that you would have been a sad man watching Tom Kitten try to get a run all the way up the straight.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that first. That's a good one, Ralphie. Well, at the end of the day, of course, in terms of damage, thank goodness, you know, because I'm too conservative with money, 1x4 was a small loss, right? But nevertheless, painful. What appeared to be I'm looking at what's the tactics, right? And what's happening in these scenarios? Firstly, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I have to. It's just the facts. Nash, you know, whether he was told this plan or he made it up in his own head, it can only be one or the other. That just follow J-Mac. J-Mac completely outsmarted him in running. Completely outsmarted, because you could see from the tapes and the stewards' vision that step one, when they jumped and got rolling, he said, I'm just going to sit behind and follow J-Mac everywhere. And J-Mac caught him out. And then he got stuck in the traffic. Now, Tom Kitten's been getting stuck in traffic a lot.
Yes.
Every single run. So this also begs the other flip side of the scenario about what I said earlier about, you know, what's the stable's intention? You know, what is it really?
Well, after our last pod, I did say Rose Hill Guineas looks the big sort of put big red circle on it. Now the Rose Hill Guineas next start. Are you with me?
Right. Okay. That's a mile, is it?
2000.
Oh, 2000, yeah. Well, there you go. I am with you, of course. I am with you. Nash, why I want to come back to Nash,
yes,
is that's not typically what he does. He usually rides his own race.
Yep.
He didn't here. He wrote to that plan. He said, I'm just tracking you everywhere. I don't know. From a race tactics point of view, definitely not the right move. to follow him. Absolutely not.
I call it death by speed, Matt, but sometimes you just got such a mindset to just follow one horse that sometimes you can be put out in the wrong spot yourself.
Well, then he got caught. He got caught everywhere because what happened was J-Max actually snookered him in the end.
Yep.
Because he knew he was behind him. And then when Encap strolled up, he's gone. He said, that's what's going to happen. I'm going to go. You're going to get stuck there, buddy. And he absolutely got stuck there. And, well, let's talk about that. You know, what does that mean? I guess that's the other side of the coin. The impact was probably one length. He's actually outkicked Militarize and Celestial Legend over the last 200 metres. But I don't want that to be taking away from the performances of the first two horses. They were fantastic. Actually, even Cafe Millennium was sensational, right?
Yeah.
But Celestial Legend, let's start there. 2.5 lengths above benchmark first section. 3.5 above between the 8 and the 4. Unbelievable. Entitled to absolutely weak. And mind you, a little bit of a softening coming around the turn. About 6. The rebound, 0.5. I don't feel the horse had anything more to give in this race under this scenario and really tasting the pressure. I was probably thought just for a fleeting moment this could score a lot higher because the Raws had come in at 6.7.
Yep.
And 3.3, probably I was looking for a little bit more, but it was still fantastic. Second best performance of the day. Another step in, you know, this horse's direction upwards. So I'm with the communication from the person.
Alistair.
Alistair talking about, is this the new one? You know, like, is this the new star for this stable? Well, I think you mentioned it, Ralphie, that they've got a pretty big opinion of this horse, and yeah, absolutely. I mean, I thought the horse had to do it at both ends.
So this puts both these horses, I'm not sure which way they're going, by the way. Like I said, I'm very confident Tom Kitten's a Rose Hill Giddy's horse, but I just wonder if both these horses militarize as well if you know, the stables love the weight drop of going into a Doncaster. I mean, low threes, it probably needs another two lengths to be a typical Doncaster chance. Are they in that sort of conversation of being able to elevate further?
Yeah, well, the trainer was articulating that they are going to give that a go, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, it's great for your stallion profile.
Yeah. Can it make the next step up? We'd have to see the field, Ralphie, and see where, you know, we've got to look at the chessboard, as I call it. Where does everybody draw? What sort of conditions are we going to have in a day? All I can say is it's going to be salivating, that race. But, yeah, I want to see if we can make some money as well.
Cafe Millennium is interesting. Sometimes the market just gets sick of forgiving a horse. And $71 on Saturday, wind stamped him a couple of times. He's a big sort of bugger and sort of got genuine raw talent. I saw Tom Marquin, just looking at the jockey quotes here from the Racing New South Wales website. He's run huge. Obviously, had a spin around on him last year. That was as a two-year-old. He's done well physically. For a moment, I thought he was going to go over the top. We put him in Sizzlers in the ninth, and then I think he dropped right out. He obviously wasn't right at the end of his prep. Resumed on a slow track, but on Saturday, Vince, on a good track, he got to show what he is, and, gee, he could be a Derby-type horse.
Well, yeah, I look at it like this. Maybe Nash should have been doing what that rider was doing.
Full momentum wide.
Yeah, maybe that's what he should have been doing, because that's the lanes, and that's running your own race. He ran his own race. He actually eclipsed all the runners in front of him over the last 100 as well, which I thought was pretty impressive, given like what the horse had to do, and just looking at the structure of the race as well and bringing some clarity to that. I mean, have a look at it. The horses still had to be racing above benchmark.
Yep.
Maybe a slight overextension between the 8 and the 4. But I loved what happens in the home straight. Whilst this horse was deteriorating like most of the others, he maintained his velocity all the way up the straight, 0.6 above between the 4 and the 2, and the same with the last 200 metres, 0.6 above. It was a fantastic ride. Now, how much do we have to allow the ride to be the governing factor versus where the horse is at? But, I mean, this horse has put the riding on the wall. He's you know, he might be unlucky, he might run into these horses every time, but he's probably capable of turning the tides on them.
Chris has made a point. I'll just back the truck up, actually, because it's an important part about what you often say, Vince, and I'll just be quicker about it. But usually I would have just backed the win, but having learned Vince for many years, decided to have with Imperatrice 3 units the win, 20 the places. I got $1.80. Therefore, instead of losing, I won. So I'm a slow learner, but thanks, Vince. So that goes back to your protecting your own money basis.
Yeah, well, he did better than me. I only managed to get $1.50, so I'm not so lucky. But the reality is, of course, I was able to get victory. I was still pretty conservative, you know. Yep. Coming back to that, I didn't go, you know, aggressively, although all the communication and just the yard comments coming in was like right on point for the horse. So not something I could have fault, but I was already on, and yeah, he got a lot better price than me, and well done for doing that. Sometimes you don't have that luxury, Ralphie.
Couple of points we've touched on in a broader sense from Warren. Came up in conversation. I'd be interested in your and Vince's thoughts on jockey form and how you guys rate them. I heard a commentator, Ron Duffy, I think it was, yesterday saying Kieran was out of form a while back, went back to the provincials, rode everywhere to get his form back, and was lauded yesterday for the last 2 winners. As a ruckman, Warren, not me, the old adage, form is temporary, class permanent. Is that a truism you both believe in? Next week, will you mark down a selection due to a jockey seemingly be out of form or the jockey getting it right? Are Vince's A-grade bets only on the top tier of jockeys?
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's a good filter, isn't it?
Well, it's very, very important. It's typically, it's one of the most critical factors outside of once you've profiled the horse. It really, a lot of my judgment calls in terms of how you stake does land in the end with the rider.
Yep. You gotta have confidence.
You've got to. You've got, yep, got to have that belief. And then you get situations like what Nash did on Saturday. I was only wanting a third, personally, right? I said, just get third, you know, like it's a great result. And I just couldn't believe that he got caught with his pants down, right? I gotta say it like that. Well, maybe he had a different mindset. I don't know, Ralphie, but riders do get caught. And sometimes this is what happens. And
yep,
it's not because they're out of form. They got caught. So it could be stable-driven.
Kieran McAvoy, just on that point, I had a look at this knowing Warren had asked that question.
Right.
6 months prior, 21 wins from 266 rides since New Year's Eve, or 30th of December, rather. Mm-hmm. 21 wins, 140 rides. So his strike rate's through the roof compared to what he was doing for 6 months. So absolutely the form backs it up in what he was doing. Lady Laguna won the other Group 1, Vince, the Canterbury Stakes. We couldn't have put a bigger stamp on her 2 starts back. It seems like she's drier, the better horse. So firstly, before we get to some of the other runners, which we will, obviously, but Lady Laguna, she's just been a ripping mare that we've tagged since her first up run.
Yeah, wow. So just got to ask you, Ralph, if you think about Espiona, where are they going, you know, from what you, when you look at things?
Well, Tom actually said, think about it, where is it going next? Oof. So there's a pretty big run that you'll explain through the data, but think about the grand finals, obviously the TJ Smith.
Right.
Espiona, well, we're going to get to Private Eye as well, but I refuse, and I have no knowledge of this whatsoever, but I refuse to believe that it wasn't a political decision in some way or another for both Espiona and Private Eye to avoid the Newmarket after the Perfect Lightning Stakes and to both go back to Sydney. So saw Espiona hang in a bit, and you know that that probably she wasn't quite at her A game. I suspect she will be next start, but they both had the perfect lead in runs for the Newmarket. Neither stayed in Melbourne, and I've got a feeling that might have been politics rather than placement. That's just my gut feel.
Okay, dude, that's bringing in the politics, eh?
Well, no, you're going to support you support your local jurisdiction. I just wonder if there was some pressure because both those fields are very small. Both those horses decided to come here instead of going for the $1.5 million in the Newmarket, and on their figures, they would have really both tested cylinders. So that's interesting in isolation. So,
well, it's funny you say that, Ralphie. Yeah. Is that the same politics maybe with Imperatrice? Should have been racing in Sydney,
Vince. What a coincidence that they're just deciding to set up in Melbourne, and both times they've decided to stay in Melbourne rather than go to Sydney, as the whole stable is setting up in Melbourne. By the way, that would be smart business if that happened, that there was deals done to keep her in Melbourne. That would be smart business for Mark Hill.
Yeah, you better get the right money, because it's dumb business if you're just, you know, going to play fiddle to the game, because What was the difference in the money?
From the Everest?
Yep.
Yeah, well, the Everest was a lot.
Okay, the Everest was a lot. But even the race on Saturday, going, if it had gone to Sydney, what would have happened in terms of money? Would it have made a lot more money in Victoria versus Sydney?
Yes, yes. Okay. No, that made sense to stay for the
That made sense. Yeah. All right, well, there you go.
So but yeah, you're right. There's politics both ways. But back to Lady Laguna. She's gone again, hasn't she?
Lady Laguna. Wow, unbelievable. First of all, 4.5 lengths below benchmark first section.
Yep.
Lead speed, 0.7 below. But then there was this huge gear shift in the mid-race, like, and it was massive. Lady Laguna's gone from 4.5 below to 5.4 above. And then, unbelievable, I felt, the way this horse trucked that last 400 metres, plus 4.4. Deterioration came purely over the last 200 metres, going from sort of between the split time between the 4 and the 2 being 2.4 above to 1.9 above last 200. So half-length drop-off right at the end, pretty much indicating that this horse gave everything. Fitness, no doubt, played a big role in being able to do that. At this distance range, 1,300 metres, I can't believe the horse has taken another step, in my view.
We see it with mares, though, don't we, with good mares?
Yep. Yeah, unbelievable, because it was borderline, is there another run?
Yep.
But it came out and put in a star-studded performance.
Yeah, we'll be writing her up again as the best of the day. Of course, all our members will get that write-up as well. Sam Clipperton, think about it, said he's gone fantastic after a good spell. He strengthened up naturally from the widest barrier. I flowed up to look for a spot. There was no spot, so I just had to come back to get cover. Once I did that, the pace dropped right out. It's interesting what he felt compared to what the reality was, Vid, so I'll ask you about that. He was resenting having to go so slow, so I just let him stride. I tried to keep him in rhythm rather than continue to fight him the whole way. He's run super. Your thoughts?
Well, firstly, we look at the subtle differences first up from 112 to 120, but then the 1200 versus the 1300 and what impact that may have.
So you're referring to the length of the spell.
Yeah. So I'll look at it and say, think about it's gone 5.7 lengths below benchmark versus first up last campaign, 4.1 below. So there is a length and a half difference, but this is just the tempo of the race. When we look at the tempo that day at Randwick first up, it was 2.2 below versus 0.7, so going a little bit faster, and the horse was a lot closer. But then look at the mid-race difference though, right? This was really, really interesting. The difference in the squeezes, and this actually is important. Firstly, when you look at that first up last campaign, the mid-race squeeze was 9.2 lengths. Yes, on the weekend it was 13.4, so it was 4.2 lengths more and an extra 100 metres overall in terms of travel in the race. But then I look at how far above the benchmark were you in each of those situations, coming to that critical point between the 8 and the 4. Last campaign first up, it was 5.1 above. Here it was 7.8. That's an overreach, Ralphie. Yep. So the horse is actually overreaching.
So it's overreach on the day, but grand finals ahead.
Yeah, but this is an overreach for the horse full stop.
Right.
Right, in terms of its mid-race. That's the biggest extension it's ever done, even when I compare directly at scenario when you look at 1300 versus 1300. There was a run at Randwick. It was back in February. It was this very similar to this time last year, when the horse was travelling 10.9 below benchmark and only 0.2 above between the 8 and the 4, and that extension was 11.1. But here we're going a lot faster early, much, much more pressure in the mid-race, and then an additional 2 lengths. And then I look at what does that all mean over the last 2 and 400 metres, just to sort of try and bring clarity about where we need to be with this horse into the future. First up last campaign, it was 3.1 above. Here, we ended up, this is last 400, we ended up with a plus 2. So, slight negative when you compare the two. But then we look at the last 200 metres, there's a much bigger drop-off. 2.1 above is what it did first up last start versus 0.4. And you could see the ride deterioration, Ralphie. Look at those fractional splits. 8 to the 6, 4.6 above. 6 to the 4, 3.2 above. We've lost 1.4 lengths of velocity. 4 to the 2, 1.5 above. We've lost 1.7 lengths. and then last 400 barely breaks benchmark, the horse is done. Now, the horse is done on two fronts. Number one, the big massive overextension of two lengths, and obviously the, as fit as the horse could be, is going to feel it. So what does that mean when this horse runs next? Is it 14 days? Is it 21 days?
Well, but it's 28 days, which I like.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Graham, I just looked it up. TJ Smith, 4 weeks.
Love it. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, that can't be. Hopefully, I'll have a barrier trial in between.
Well, Joe Pride, such a master grand final trader. We'll track that, of course, as we'll track the Sydney Carnival. It starts this week. If you want our preview podcast, like I said, via my website, racetrackralphie.com.au. What we'll do, a couple of other big talking points, the challenge and of course, the continued emergence of this horse, Switzerland. We'll do that as the members bonus podcast. If you want to get that bonus podcast, become a Group 1 member, and we will send you what we do now, which will be having a good look at Switzerland and a good look at the challenge won by Passive Aggressive. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening to Year Round Carnival.